We closed our last year with over 13 million in revenue, and we now have a run rate of more than 20 million in this year, so medical only. We have a market share of 35% in the flower segment, which is the most relevant segment for us. And what is our reason to exist is that we are offering most desirable brands and products to the market, and we are the largest platform for cannabis / medical cannabis in Germany and Europe.
Hello, hustlers. Welcome to a new episode of Venture Europe with me, Colleen Fabry. I'm enjoying some medical marijuana just in time for our guest, Jakob Sand, co-founder and one of the managing partners of Cansativa. Just kidding. Or am I? Cansativa is building the largest cannabis platform in Europe and are offering the most desirable products and brands. Yummy. In 2022, they've raised the $15 million round from Snoop Dogg, Casa Verde VC firm, and currently they have a 20 million euro run rate. During this episode, we discuss Jakob's transition from being a lawyer to founding a medical marijuana startup. Just a normal and natural transition. His mindset of permanent improvement and the importance of deep work and focus. Enjoy. This episode is brought to you by EDA, the most collaborative tool for VCs and private equity investors that allows you to see in real time the true dimension of your investments and the value and impact they create. From investment decision processes to managing due diligence, supporting portfolio companies, data sharing and transparency, EDA streamlines the investment journey and fund operation management in an easy-to-use platform. Head to EDA.co, that is EDDA.co, to find out why investors like FJ Labs, Headline, and Plug and Play, among others, use EDA to manage their portfolio. Don't forget to use the code VPEDA when asking for a demo.
Our company is based in Frankfurt, so we founded in Frankfurt, and the reason why we founded in Frankfurt was because my brother Benedict and I, we lived in Frankfurt. So I have three kids, and my wife and I, we decided to leave the city right before the pandemic started, and then we had like 2 years we spent in a smaller town, and now we live at a very rural place an hour's drive from Frankfurt.
For the listeners, you have this beautiful hill and a lot of greenery there. It looks very nice and relaxing. I was wondering if you could compare, what are the main differences between living and working in the city in Frankfurt and then living and working in the rural area?
So it was a very personal decision to leave the city when we had like our first child, and then the second was on her way. So my wife was pregnant. We decided to leave the city and get like all the benefits that you have from the countryside. So my parents-in-law are right around the corner. We have a lot of space. We have a big garden. You're in the woods. And I think it's basically was very easy for us because even though we love the city, we went to restaurants, theater, the whole focus and your life changes that much when you get kids that it's for a very long period of several years. It won't be like how it was before, the lifestyle, what you do in the evening and so on. So it was an easy decision for us. And it's very, very different because it's very calm. There's not even a restaurant here that I could recommend to go to. So I personally really love that I have the touch points back to Frankfurt as well, because I'm in the office typically at least one day in the week.
And also you mentioned that you had a very productive week. What does a productive week look like for you?
I typically get up very early. So this is, again, a dad's lifestyle, I think. So I get up at 5 a.m., get a shower, and then start my day at 5:30 about. And usually I try to take the first 2 hours of the day to focus on topics that are most relevant to me and my professional life. So a lot of reading, getting inspirations, and working on strategic projects. So one of the key items that I currently have a focus on is how we get better on setting goals, being transparent in the organization, getting aligned, being more productive and efficient on what matters to the whole company. And I usually observe that in a lot of weeks, I spend those very, very important 2 hours of the day before everyone is up for like managing my emails, writing some stuff down that I need to do, reviewing stuff or results that the team produced. And this week, I really managed to focus a lot on things that might be very, very important for the future of my own development, being a leader in the company and of the company itself. And this is always like a great success for me. If on Friday morning, already can tell this was a productive week and not just being buried with a lot of meetings, ad hoc stuff that you have to prepare for, some fires that you have to fight. But I mean, you can imagine that this is happens quite often, that you are more in firefighting mode than getting really time to focus.
It kind of seems that this is a challenge that a lot of CEOs have, being a little bit more in the reactive mode, and then you don't really have time to be proactive, to think strategically on the direction that you want to take, or how can you make the machine, the organization, to run more smoothly. So it's very interesting to see that those 2 hours in the morning that you found are the hours where you try to be more proactive than reactive. And you are managing right now Consativa, and we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But if we take a step back, you were a lawyer for 4 years. So I was wondering, how does one transition from being a lawyer to becoming a founder of a medical marijuana startup?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. And I think looking back, it's very, very different. I think I learned some very important tools and the mindset being a lawyer. So I understand contracts, I understand regulatory stuff, and can be very structured in my thinking and very analytical. But this is not what is required to be an entrepreneur. But it's very helpful, and it was very, very helpful in the very early days. But if I recall how my days back then were compared to my days are now, it's totally different.
Do you remember the day that the idea came to be? I'm kind of wondering, like, when did the idea come to you and your brother? And then do you remember the moment when you guys were like, you know what, let's go all in?
Yeah, I can remember very, very well, because it was a very rainy day as today, back in 2017. And at this time, I worked at a notary office. So it was one of the last steps of my legal training before you get your bar exam. And I had to deliver a legal opinion. It was about the question whether a company can register the term cannabis as part of the business name. In 2017, it was right before the medical cannabis law was passed in Germany, so it wasn't that obvious. But I analyzed the legal framework, I understood that there was a law to come, and I clearly understood all those implications. And I love the idea of, hey, I didn't know that you can trade cannabis in Germany legally. And I really love this idea of selling cannabis in a regulated, very tough regulated market. And I started scribbling company names, logos, brands on my desk mat. I tend to get distracted very fast if my task is done. So I finished the legal opinion. And then I just thought about again and again how this could work. And I typically would consider myself as very curious, but creative as well. So I started using cannabis and sativa and Germany and tried to put this together into like the idea of a brand or a company. I had the idea of this should be called Consativa, and I designed on my desk mat some kind of a logo, not comparable to what we have now, more like cannabis leaves and so on. And I didn't really know how many leaves a cannabis leaf has, and it was very ridiculous, but it was fun. And I texted my brother, hey, let's do this. And this was very much how the idea came, but this was very far away from the moment of, oh my God, let's go all in, let's start it. I'm some kind of a gambler, so not in the sense that I go like to the casino, but I love playing with ideas, testing ideas. But at the same time, I'm a kind of a dreamer. So I had, and I still have, a kind of a lack of execution power. So I love to dream about things, but I desperately need someone who gets into the driver's seat and can lead a project. And this was where my brother came in. And there was one very specific moment where he took the lead of making this project successful. And I think if he didn't do this, I would still be scribbling like ideas on some desk mat in a law office. And there was this very specific trigger point when my brother texted me again And we were in a seed fund raise. So for me, still just a game, just understand how things are working. And it's nice and it's cool. And having money in a company that you don't know really if you want to do is good. But then at an evening, Benedict just sent me an email or text and told me that he had just quit his job and that he will do 100% Consativa, no matter if we get the funding or not. And this was the point in time where I understood if he is in, I must be in. He is the most focused guy that I know, most competitive, most reliable, and the most executing person that I know. So if he's in, I'm in and things will work. And this definitely was how everything turned into an idea, like a bit of a game for me, into a very, very serious operations and something that we said, let's do it. We're in.
I would like to maybe go back to what you said, that you liked the idea to sell cannabis, but in a highly regulated market. Did you guys smoke a joint before? Like, did you know benefits, potential benefits? Or was it more like the regulatory aspect and the gap in the market that attracted you? Or both?
The latter. So I think, at least for myself, I had my experience when I was in school, but never really was into smoking cannabis. So I had more an affection to alcohol, but I had my experience. But this was nothing for me that actually came to my mind when I first came into this legal cannabis topic, but rather having a highly regulated industry that is not really existing, but that has a huge potential to be a topic of entrepreneurial interest. And I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, didn't really know how and where and when, but this was for me the idea. This resonates with my talents and my training being a lawyer, very much focused on what I know, what I can, and what is required to be successful. And at this time, still, our father was kind of involved as our angel investor. And our father is a former heart surgeon, and we learned from him, his philosophy always was not to be too focused and too narrow about what can help and heal your patient, but rather you have to take every route that helps and is of a benefit to your patient, even though sometimes you don't really understand why. And this was, I think, main trigger point for us to say, okay, even though there's a lot of stigma and our grandparents and friends will think that we're nuts, we make it and we jump right into it.
Hey guys, I just want to take a second to tell you about a private membership network. It is for founders and tech CEOs that raised a minimum 3 million euros or they are at 1 million euro annual recurring revenue. We'll have a monthly meetup facilitated by an executive coach and a yearly gathering in a fancy location. We already have some well-known names from the tech ecosystem signed up, from seed stage to unicorns to bootstrap founders. If you're interested to join, head up to ventureeurope.eu and sign up. You'll see a link under resources. Congratulations for being so brave, in particular in such a conservative country like Germany. Now, like being at a helms together with your brother of Consativa and learning more about the market, what do most people get wrong about medical marijuana?
I think there are two different perspectives that many people take, and both of them are wrong. So the first perspective is that medical cannabis is like any other pharmaceutical, and that the rules and experiences from pharmaceutical supply chains work here. So from sourcing the product, supply chains, logistics, and the marketing that you do, and there are so many pitfalls you can like fall into. For example, you need a sales force in the market, you need to see doctors, you need to create prescriptions. So this is very much right for the pharmaceutical industry. But there are so many particularities for cannabis that are slightly different, but that actually make a difference. So that are not that blueprint pharmaceutical supply chain. So this is the first. And the other side is the total opposite, that you think that it's all about just recreational product perception and you just need a product that is attractive for self-paying so-called patients that are rather looking for wellness instead of therapy, because the truth is somewhere in the middle. So both of those worlds are correct and parts of this. And forging this into how medical cannabis works is what we have experienced and learned now over almost 7 years. And you have to take parts and pieces from both of those different worlds. But you see that in the ecosystem, on the level of companies and people that are active in the business, you see a lot more people that are either in the pharmaceutical or the recreational part, but not really get the best of two worlds. And I think this is the most important thing that we learned, to adapt several different parts and to forge this together into an approach to the market that is very innovating and adapting to how specific the market is. So even if you have someone, a patient that wants to have a product that is comparable and can be benchmarked to recreational products, he still has to see his doctor. You have to convince him to write a prescription. He needs to go to get the product in a pharmacy. There is the health insurance companies involved. If you get a cost reimbursement, yes or no, it is public perception, how to be perceived by politics, by the general public. It's very, very, very hard to find like the right pathway to take the best of all worlds.
Probably you know more about it. I can definitely see a case where if someone has alcoholic tendencies, that you could make a good argument that recreating with marijuana is less damaging than recreating with alcohol. I don't know, like which other cases can you see, or what argument usually you make when you say, I want to use marijuana because it's recreational?
If we focus on the recreational part of the discussion, I think one of the key arguments is that having a regulated supply chain, which is transparent, which is has quality assurance installed, that pays taxes, and that is regulated and non-regulated, has less risk and threats for public health than a fully unregulated and illegal supply chain. Because cannabis consumption and production and wholesale and everything, it happens every day, no matter if it's allowed or not. And so if this is the reality of our society, then bringing this market into transparency, where you have touch points with people, where you can understand why they consume, how they consume, and what they consume, you have the opportunity to regulate this kind of consumption patterns and everything into a direction that is for the benefit of public health. And yes, you always can say cannabis is not as risky as alcohol, which has been shown by many studies, but then the conclusion shouldn't be allow cannabis, but rather ban alcohol. So I don't think that this is the right argument, but rather what are the implications on the how we see cannabis and how we talk about cannabis. If children and young people are open and talk about it and maybe see that they have a problematic consumption pattern, because typically, and this is what many doctors confirm as well, cannabis is not the root cause for problems, but some kind of mechanism to cope with problems that you have. And if you're getting more open with your cannabis use and consumption, it's easier to get to the root cause of the problems that you have that make you consume cannabis in a way that is not good for your health or your brain, and that can damage. So putting this everything towards a more transparent approach will help working on these issues, on the side of, yes, there are negative effects of cannabis, especially for kids and young people, but for people that are in a certain responsible situation that are like grown-ups, there is a part of cannabis consumption that is not a risk to their health. And this is like what you have to allow as a society. If something is not a threat for the individual and not a threat for society, you definitely have to allow it, and to somehow synchronize again the public policy and the perception of the society that has changed over the last decades. And so we have to readjust and adapt the public policy to get to this level again.
And is now possible? I saw that you guys apply doctors and pharmacies. Is now possible to go in Germany and buy medical marijuana? Let's say on the recreational part, if I talk with a doctor, can I go to the store? Or you guys are working in the preparation for when that is going to be possible?
So there is a today already historic timeline of the events. So if we go back to late 2021, the government decided to legalize cannabis for recreational purposes. However, this whole project got delayed and delayed. And where we are now, June 2023, is that there are two pillars, two separate pathways that the government wants to follow. The first is decriminalization of cannabis, so the consumption. It won't be a narcotic, but rather a regulated substance, but a non-narcotic product. It will be allowed to have home grow and this club grown cannabis, but rather a non-commercial market. On the other side, what is intended as a second pillar or a second pathway is that there will be pilot projects on recreational supply chains, dispensaries, and so on, but rather a model that you see, for example, in Switzerland, where you have local projects, local production, and maybe people that have to register to get cannabis for recreational purposes. And both of those two pathways are still in the political process. So we expect that for the first pillar, for the decriminalization, we will see law go to the parliament by end of the summer. And for the second part, the pilot and model projects, we expect that by end of this year, there will be a law passed or delivered to the parliament. So for the time being, we are very, very much focusing on the medical side of the industry, because this is what we can address, because we cannot address, or we don't want to address, home grow and club grow. We definitely want to engage in the pilot programs, but it is not of like business relevance that much. And for medical cannabis, you have to get a prescription by your doctor. He is in general free to decide that you are a patient that needs this kind of therapy, but you have to pay on your own if you don't get the approval for cost reimbursement. So you get a approval for cost reimbursement if you have a severe condition. If there is no other treatment available for you, then you get cost reimbursement and it will be covered by public health insurance.
And in 2022, you guys have raised $15 million round led by Snoop Dogg's Casa Verde VC firm. How did that happen? Did you guys meet Snoop Dogg, or it was like his investment team kind of assessing it?
It is his investment team, so we didn't meet him. I would be still very curious to meet him, but actually it didn't happen so far. It was very surprising to us that we came into this process, because it was summer 2021. My brother was on vacation and an email hit our inbox by one of the investment managers of the Casa Verde team, and they just wanted to get into touch with us. And Benedict and I were like in a fundraising process 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021. And we was kind of exhausted and just wanted to have like a good summer break. And then this email hit our inbox. And I told Benedict, we have to react. We have to explore this. This might be an opportunity. You can't have enough money into your account. Let's try it. And he was pissed because he's typically preparing all the paperwork and the pitch decks. But we then said, no, we have to start this conversation. And we were very, very fast on feeling that there's a very good relation, that they can be a very smart money because they have experience from other jurisdictions. And then we formally entered into a term sheet and in the whole process. And in winter of 2021, when we were in the structuring of the round before signing, we had this huge release of that cannabis shall be legalized in Germany. So this was very much a accelerator than in this. And yeah, we really like the overall process. It was very entrepreneurial from their side. I've seen a lot of transactions in my former job, and what I've experienced there, that it is about the business, it is about the relation. We liked how we worked together on this transaction, and I think this is clearly how our relation with Casa Verde is now. It's very, very productive and very easy and very fast in decision-making and so on.
Let's hear from Karen Vadhera from Casa Verde on why they invested.
At the time, we were getting very serious about Germany and the European market as a whole. We had already been investing in the U.S. for about 5 to 6 years through our fund, Casa Verde. We understood the complexities of what it took to build a business in the burgeoning cannabis market and all the operational and regulatory complexities that come with it. So when we started visiting Germany, we knew the type of businesses and, more importantly, the type of entrepreneurs we were looking for. And while, you know, there are no specific entrepreneurial archetypes for the cannabis industry just because it's so new, Jacob and Benedict embodied a lot of what we wanted to see in great founders. They had vision, they had started building upon that and executing on it. And Jacob's background in the law was very relevant in dealing with regulators, and Benedict also had really relevant experience as it dealt with pharma. So the two of them and the Cansativa team really built a tremendous business, and we remain incredibly bullish on their prospects in building what we think will be one of the most important operations in Europe.
Where are you guys with Cansativa now, and what are the future plans?
We have 40 people in our team right now. We closed our last year with over 13 million in revenue, and we now have a run rate of more than 20 million in this year, so medical only. We have a market share of 35% in the flower segment, which is the most relevant segment for us. And what is our reason to exist is that we are offering most desirable brands and products to the market, and we are the largest platform for cannabis / medical cannabis in Germany and Europe. And what is now our focus for this year and for the next year, and always based on the assumption that legalization will take some additional time for the future in general, is that we are focusing a lot more of building very, very good products and brands that sell through our pharmacy networks to patients. We are focusing on getting traction on the European market, so exporting in those countries that have a medical cannabis system as well. So we had the first export deals that we already executed on, and this is clearly one of our focus as well. If you look at Cansativa, it is two very specific pillars. So the first is our own branded products, which have a high quality, good availability in different brand portfolios, different values that we offer to patients. So one is more premium high quality, the other one is more still high quality, but a nicer price. And the other pillar is our wholesale platform, where we have the broadest portfolio in whole Germany. Almost any relevant product is one product that pharmacies can buy with Cansativa. And this is actually something where we work for the German Republic as well, because the domestically grown medical cannabis is grown on behalf of the German state, and we are taking care of the distribution on behalf of the German state for this specific domestically grown part of the cannabis. And we expect that the ecosystem more or less will stay as it is for the next few years. So there will be iterations and evolutions, but not this disruption that everyone expected in 2021 when we talked in Germany about legalization. So we are very mature now in the market. We know that it takes time, but we will see that the medical market will grow, that the patient numbers are still growing. And we expect that once we have a decriminalization and once cannabis is not a narcotic anymore, that the medical market will definitely grow a lot. So we expect a 5 to 10x growth, because it's a very, very important step for destigmatization and for doctors to be more open to prescribe. And it will reduce the pressure on the regulatory side of how to document every movement of the product, and like four eyes principle everywhere, and a lot of paperwork to file for doctors and wholesalers, manufacturers and pharmacies. So this will be the most relevant driver for the market, and we are here to be even better on our market share, to improve our top line, improve our bottom line as well. So this is something to be attractive in those times where access to venture capital has changed a lot overall, not only in our industry. This is very important. And yeah, we very much love being here and having a very, very motivated team that are perfectly executing on the projects that we have.
Exciting road ahead. It does take time. And as you said, like, it's not going to be overnight, but it kind of seems that you guys are very, very well positioned for what's coming. And if we change gears a little bit at the end, let's get personal a little bit. Entrepreneurship is a roller coaster. How do you recharge physically and emotionally?
My physical and emotional recharge is definitely both my family. So physically a lot my kids, because they are very active. We go outside all the time that I have the opportunity to. We have a big garden where we have a lot of work to do still, because we just moved in and it's like a jungle. And emotionally, it is definitely my wife. So my wife is the single most important person that gets me grounded to earth, that lets me think that no matter what happens, life is good and we are fine.
Wonderful. And what does success mean to you?
Success means to me permanent improvement, So that as an organization, as a company, but as an individual contributor as well, getting better every day, learn every day and stay in a permanent status of beta. You're never done and there's nothing like perfection. So always improve, always work on yourself. If you manage to do this, this is success.
I like that, permanent improvement. Tell me about a book that had an outsized impact on your life.
So I try to read a lot. Don't have the time. You can imagine entrepreneurial lifestyle and kids as well. But a few books that I read in the last few weeks or month and that had an impact, a very like recent impact was, and I told earlier about setting goals and finding like a framework to set goals. It's John Doerr, Measure What Matters. It's all about OKR and how OKR can lead a company to success. Then a book that helped me to refocus and to find my schedule of working early in the morning was Deep Work by Cal Newport, to very much find and take times for focus work and to identify what is my focus time and what is more shallow work, and then build your schedule around it so that it resonates with what you have to get done. And then there is, I think, Eric Schmidt and some other people that about David Campbell, the $1 trillion coach. It had an impact on me because it very much shaped my perception of that it's always important to try to get the best out of people. And no matter if it's the facility manager or it's a C-level executive, it's always very, very important. And it always gives improvement if you have the people in the focus and try to help them. And being a coach and trying to be a coach to your team is something that I try to do. And the last point that made an impact is Carol Dweck, Mindset, teaching yourself a growth mindset. I have the privilege that I think by default, I have a growth mindset. I've learned this when I was younger because I've learned this from my family. And it's a privilege and a gift, but you can work on it. And if you work hard on your mindset, you can make it the transition from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. And it helps you in every single way in your life, professionally, in your private life, coping with a crisis. It makes you feel better and it makes you more performant and the output is higher. So working on the mindset, and I think the pope of growth mindset is Carol Dweck. So this was very helpful as well.
Lovely, lovely books. I had opportunity to read all of them. And I agree with you that mindset definitely can change so many things. And it's just so powerful, right? Like how we run our day. It's very much based on your thoughts and your mindset. And also the way that you deal with problem is very much based on your mindset. So the last question, if Jakob from 5 years ago embarking in this entrepreneurial journey would listen to this episode, what would you tell him?
Focus. I have now created a list in my notes that I open every morning. It says top of my mind to just remember me that it's one or three or two topics at a time that I very, very much focus on. And everything else, you have to decide a lot. You have to take care of a lot of stuff, but define what is on top of your mind, what is the most relevant topic that you're working on, and then being very, very exclusive on this. So focus, focus, focus. One last anecdote that I have, over the last year grew very fast and we had a lot of people and everyone was buckled up for the legalization to come. We had a list of priorities and projects in the company that had, I think, more than 50 entries, and it was impossible to do it. And now we have three main focuses that we are following in three main projects. And it's so much easier, more efficient, and not that frustrating for everyone. So focus is everything. And this I had to learn because I'm always on and I'm always dreaming about a lot of stuff, and bringing myself more to focus. This would have been very helpful 5 years ago.
So focus, focus, focus for all the dreamers out there. Jakob, thank you so much for taking the time. Congrats for the journey so far. Congrats for the family. It seems that you guys are on a very exciting path ahead.
Thank you very much.